Luke chapter 22 is where we're going to begin. And we'll do a different sermon. It's going to have to be two parts. And this is a requested sermon. I'll do requested sermons if you ask me to. But this is a sermon on a detailed explanation of the Roman scourging, what Jesus physically and mentally would have went through when beaten, scourged, nailed to the cross until he died. So what we're going to do is we're going to title this message, The Suffering of Jesus. Now, it's going to have to be two parts, and I'm going to tell you why. If I get done with this in 20 minutes, I'm going to quit. Of course, the odds on that taking 20 minutes would be, well, that'd rank right up there parting the Red Sea too, wouldn't it? But anyhow, we're going to focus on two parts, his physical suffering. We'll focus just on his physical suffering this morning. And in times you really need to see what he suffered, it really helps you gain a new appreciation just for the suffering that he went through to save you from your sin. Sometimes we're just kind of matter-of-fact with regard to that, and we really do indeed forget what he went through willingly so that he could save your soul. And it's good to go back and look at the sacrifice and the different things, and I broke this down so that we can trace the steps of it. But we're going to look at his physical suffering, but then we're going to look at his propitiation suffering. And propitiation means the appeasement of God's wrath. In comparison to the physical suffering, the propitiation suffering was so much greater. Basically, what Jesus did was he suffered hell on the cross. And God's wrath was appeased in his son. And that's what we're going to look at next week. So today we'll look at just the physical part, which was tremendous. But in no way does it compare to the propitiation suffering that he faced as being made sin for us and having God's wrath come down upon him for our sin. So that's what we'll look at next week if we're here, okay? The Lord might come. We might be in heaven next. We'll talk about it next week in glory. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Yeah. Remember that sermon we was going to preach last week? Wouldn't that be great? We might just be in heaven next week at this time. So this morning we're going to focus on the physical part. So let's go ahead at Luke chapter 22. There's several things we're going to look at. Luke chapter 22, and let's begin at verse 30. We're going to look at verse 39 through 44. Now, I'm going to look at a lot of text. I have to in order to show it to you. So you're going to have to be disciplined and follow along with me and listen because I will be probably reading a lot. But I want to get you to get a grip this morning on the physical suffering that he went through the day that he was crucified and the night before he was crucified. And again, that's what he done in order to save us. That's how much he loves us. That's how much he loves us. So Luke chapter 22, we're going to begin, you have to begin in the garden. We have to begin in the garden because, to be honest with you, that's where his suffering began. That's where this suffering with regard to his physical part, that's where it began, was in the garden. Are you ready? Let's go ahead and look at verse 39 of Luke chapter 22. It says, "And as he came out, he went as he was wont." What's the word "wont" mean? It means custom. It was his custom. And his custom was to go to the Mount of Olives. And he would go there to pray. And that's what he's doing here now. He's drawing aside, and he takes in the garden with him Peter, James, and John, and he asks them to stay up with him because he's heavy. He knows what's about to happen. He's known since before the world began. The book of Revelation says that Jesus was slain from the foundations of the world. The Old Testament scriptures prophesied in detail what he would go through. Isaiah 53, the great servant passage. Psalms chapter 22, all of these things were prophesied in advance. His suffering was pictured even in the sacrifice system. So he knew all of this was about to happen. And since he was the God-man, he also had a body of flesh. He felt emotion and he felt pain. And you see that here. It says in verse verse 40, and when he was at the place, he said, pray that ye enter not into temptation. And when he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast, and he kneeled down and he prayed. And he said, Father, if thou be willing to remove this cup from me, nevertheless not my will, but thine be done. When you look at other texts, he made that statement three times. Now, I want to show you something from that. Did Jesus know he had to die? Why would he request, Father, if this can pass from me, let it pass? Because if there would have been any way, an old hell-bound, rotten, no-good-for-nothing sinner like Jeff Arthur could be saved, other than by the humiliating, sacrificial death of his son, it would have been that way. The fact that he requests three times, if this can pass, let it pass, is clear evidence. There's no way it could pass. There's no way it could pass and him save you unless he goes through the physical shame and suffering that he went through on Calvary's cross. Okay, everybody got that? Did Jesus know it couldn't pass? Yeah, but the request is there just to let you know there was no other way. There is no other way. He had to suffer and he had to die. Okay? Verse 43, and there appeared an angel unto him from heaven and to strengthen him. Now here you get where his suffering began as far as his agony is concerned. It says in verse 44, and being in agony, he prayed more earnestly. And the idea of agony is anguish, anguish of heart. Think about it. Not only did he know the physical part was coming, but he was going to be made sin. He that was without sin would be made sin. He would be separated for the first time throughout time, or even before there was time. He would be separated from his Father. Remember one of the statements of the cross that Jesus made? My God, why hast thou forsaken me? You know why he forsook him? Us. He couldn't save him. He couldn't save us and save him. Jesus had to go through what he did to pay the debt that we owed so that we would be saved. You see why it's natural for him to expect a little dedication from his people? Can I say it one more time? You see why it's just natural? It's only reasonable. Look at Romans, it's only reasonable that he expect a little bit of dedication from those that he died for. It's only reasonable. He ain't asking us to do anything unreasonable to come to his house. He ain't asking anything unreasonable to sacrifice so that we can serve him as we should. It's not unreasonable. Do y'all think it is? I don't. It's only reasonable we do what we do. He gave so much so we could be saved. Now let's go ahead and look at this. So he's in agony right here, verse 44. He sees it. He knows what's getting ready to happen. He's known it for, and it's hitting him. And he prayed more earnestly, and the sweat. Now, I want to draw attention to his sweat. His sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. Now, the only writer that records this is Luke. And what's interesting about Luke, we know what Luke was, don't we? He was a doctor, Dr. Luke. He was called the beloved physician. And he records this phenomenon in this text that Jesus, as he prayed and the sweat come off him, it was as blood that dropped off him. And you can look this up at home. I'll probably pronounce it wrong. But hematidrosis, it's hematidrosis, hematidrosis. And it's a blood sweat. And what happens is the capillaries of the sweat glands rupture. And it makes your sweat blood. Do you know what causes that? Extreme anguish. So that's why we started his suffering here. The blood sweat was an evidence of the great emotional distress that he was under whenever he was in the garden, so that the sweat drops of blood came off of him. Okay? Now, let's go to the Gospel of John, chapter 18. There's something else I want you to see here, and we're going to take our time, and I'm going to show you the text, and you stay with me. This will bless you if you listen to it. Should make you closer to Him when you see what He done for you. You forget. You forget sometimes the awesome things that He went through, the suffering that He went through. And you take it for granted often. John chapter 18. It records something here. Of course, when He was in the garden, what happened is that's when the temple guard, led by who? Judas, one of the 12. The temple guard is coming, and they have Judas with them, and they're coming there. They knew where he was at because he often went there to do what? Pray. They went to his prayer spot. They knew he could find him there. And they brought that multitude there. And they came with clubs and different things and weapons like this coming against some kind of thief. But I want to point something out to you right here with regard to his suffering. John chapter 18, and let's notice verse 4. Jesus, therefore, knowing all these things should come upon him, he went forth and said, "Whom seek ye?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And Jesus said unto them, "I am he." Actually, he just says, "I what? I am." Whenever Moses asked what the name of God was, remember, whenever he's on the in the book of Exodus, what did God say? "I am that I am." Jesus was God in the flesh. Okay? Then answered Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus said unto them, "I am he." And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. And as soon as he had said unto them, "I am," what did they do? They went backward and fell to the ground with just the words. Just two words. "I am." What happened to this multitude? Oh, he knocked them flat. It's like a wind blowed them down. What did he do that for? He wants you to know he was going willingly. I mean, he wasn't drug kicking and screaming. He laid his life down. As a matter of fact, he said, "No man takes it from me. I lay my life down." This was a willing substitution that he was making. So he just showed you right here, just by saying "I am" and flattening them out, that they couldn't take him unless he lets them. I mean, isn't that something? So that's another thing you see. And you don't have to turn to this one. But if you look in Matthew chapter 26 and verse 53, Simon Peter is always one to act before he thinks, isn't he? And you would expect it. He pulls a sword out and he cuts the high priest's servant's ear off. I believe his name was Malchus, if I remember right. You know what Jesus did? He reached down, got his ear, and put it right back on him. I'd have kicked it over the heel, wouldn't you? I mean, he was there to arrest him. I mean, that's how we are. I mean, these were guys that was going to abuse him and things, but you just see how kind he was. He just hooked his ear back on. He's the one that made it. He just hooked it right back on there. See? You know what he said to Simon Peter? He said, "Don't you know that I could call for 12 legions of angels to deliver me if I desired that, basically?" We don't know exactly what was in a legion. Most think it's 6,000. That'd be 72,000 angels if he wanted to deliver him. He could. One call, and it would have been done. One call. One angel, if you go back into the book of Kings in the days of Hezekiah, when the Assyrians surrounded Jerusalem in the days of Hezekiah, God sent one angel through the camp of the Assyrians, and when they got up the next morning, there was 185,000 dead corpses. One angel. He could have called for 72,000 angels. The point is, he's going willingly. It's not being drugged there. This is a willing substitution. He couldn't save himself and save us too. had to go through what he did in order to save us. So we're in the garden now. You see the suffering begin. Now from here, we go to the house of Annas. And we're in John chapter 18. And let's move to the second part. The house of Annas. Now at the time, Annas and Caiaphas were both high priests. You read that in the book of Luke chapter 3 also. It's a shame. The priesthood had drifted into a horrible state. These men were crooks and they lived for money and politics. That's what they were. Annas had been removed by one of the Romans. One of the Roman governors had removed him. But yet at the same time, Caiaphas was his son-in-law. So they kept everything still yet in his family. So a lot of the Jews would recognize Annas as the high priest. But also the Romans had appointed Caiaphas. But remember, he is the son-in-law to Annas. So Annas is still the power behind the throne, so to speak. So you have two priests. So they bring him first to Annas. Let's go ahead and notice that. In John chapter 18, it records that he went to Annas. Look at verse 12. Then the band of the captives and officers of the Jews took Jesus and they bound him. Now, they treat him like a criminal already, don't they? So they already bind him. I don't know how they tied him up, but they do tie him up. They bind him. Like he was a common thief, like he had done something wrong, they bind him. And they lead him to Annas first. Everybody see that in verse 13? They lead him to Annas first. So he goes to the old high priest first. He was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was the high priest that same year. Okay, so he's brought before Annas first. Now, when he's before Annas, if you'll look down in verse 19, you see the interrogation before Annas. And let's go ahead and notice that interrogation. It says, the high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and his doctrine. What's the word doctrine mean? Somebody tell me. Bible teaching. I hear people say all the time, we need to get away from doctrine. Do we? Here's what you just said. We need to get away from Bible teaching. There's only one person that wants you to get away from Bible teaching. You know who that is? That's the devil. Man, he hates churches that teach the Bible. I mean, God's Word should be found in God's house. So, he spoke to him of his doctrine, his teaching. Jesus answered and said, I spake openly to the world. I taught in the synagogues and in the temple whether the Jews always resort, and in secret have I said nothing. He's basically saying, you know my teaching. They heard him preach. As a matter of fact, on occasion, they sent the temple guard down to arrest him. And you know what happened? Jesus was preaching in the temple, and they forgot to arrest him. And they come back, and they said, well, where's he at? And they said this, listen to this. No one spake like that man. Jesus was a speaker. He's the greatest preacher that ever walked this planet. Nobody spake like him. So there has never been anybody walk this earth that was the speaker the sweet king was. He spoke with power. And he spoke with authority. Okay? Verse 21, why askest thou me? Ask them which heard me. What have I said unto them? Behold, they know what I've said. And when he had thus spoken, one of the officers which stood by him struck Jesus with the palm of his hand. Now, this is when the physical part begins to happen. This is before Annas. Now, to smite with the palm of the hand could mean, if you look it up, could mean two things. It could mean they slapped him with a rod. They take a rod and bust you with that. Or it could mean to slap with your hand. It could mean either one. The Greek word means either one. So I don't know whether they slapped him or if they hit him with a rod. But this is where the physical part of it starts. Jesus answered and said, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why smitest thou me? Now look at verse 24. Now from Annas, they send him to who? Caiaphas. Now he goes to the next priest. And we see that in John 18 and verse 24. Where he's brought before Caiaphas. And Caiaphas is a heathen, too. He is a rotten, no good for nothing. He was supposed to be a religious leader, but he really wasn't. It was all a political office. And they were just the height of crooked in what they did. They actually murdered Christ. They did. They wanted him dead. And he had done nothing wrong. And the reason why they went to the Romans, because the Jews, how did they, what was their mode of execution? They stoned you to death. Remember in the book of Acts, they stoned Stephen? But they wanted Jesus crucified, but they didn't realize they were just fulfilling the Scriptures. The Old Testament prophesied that he would be crucified. Prophesied about his stripes. Prophesied everything. Everything was known and taught in the Bible in advance. Now let's go to the book of Matthew, chapter 26. Stay with me. This will bless you if you stay with me. I got tore up when I studied for it. You just sometimes don't spend the time looking at what he went through, and you take it for granted. Just the physical part was horrid. Just the physical part was horrid. But it don't nowhere near compare to the propitiation part. Matthew chapter 26, and look at verse 67. I'm sorry, verse 65 through 68. Now, this is before Caiaphas. We don't see him get slapped or hit with a rod before Annas. But also remember, he's been up all night. So he hadn't slept. So he's been up. Remember, they had the Passover, and then he went to the garden to pray, and then that's where he'd be arrested at. So he'll have no sleep at all that whole night. So you know that if you ever went a whole night without sleep, been up, you know yourself that it wears you out after a while. Matthew chapter 26, notice verse 67. Now this is before Caiaphas. I'm sorry, 65. Then the high priest rent his clothes and said, he has spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. What think ye? And they answered. Now this is, when Caiaphas is here, this is before the council. The council was called the Sanhedrin Council. And it was the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the rich. And so they were a very prominent body of Jews. The Romans let them do certain judgments. They could have, they could make certain judgments. But there, if you wanted someone killed, or if you wanted someone executed, you had to go to the Roman authorities to have it done. But they could have you, they could beat you. And that's about what you're about to see. So here's where the violence towards the great king, this is where the violence kind of escalates with regard to that. Now notice what they do to him. Verse 67, they did spit in his face. I can't stand that. Could you imagine? I mean, when I grew up, if someone spit on you, that was an instant fight, wasn't it? You didn't discuss it. Really? You didn't discuss it. That just was instant. You just knew. Whether the bigger you or not, that's just, you knew. If someone spit at you or on you, that was it. That's just what you did. Because that's the height of contempt and humiliation for somebody. So, he spit on. This was the one that spoke the world into existence. This is the one that flattened them out by just saying, I am. And they spit in his face. It makes me mad just reading about it, doesn't it, you? But that's what they did. And he took it. He could have caused the earth to open up and slide them right into hell, but he took it. He spit on it. Remember, I want you to remember, he could have stopped all of this with one call or with one word, hey, or even one thought, but he couldn't do it and save you. The Old Testament scriptures prophesied that he'd be spit on. He had to fulfill every Old Testament scripture about him, and he did. And he did it in full. All right. Verse 60 said, and they spit in his face, they buffeted him. Now, the idea of the word buffet is they hit him with their fists. So this isn't a slap. They pummeled him with their fists. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody pummeled from a good pummeler. It don't take nothing for a person's face just to swell up when they get pummeled by the bare fists. And that's what they do. This would have been the temple guard. The men under the high priest, they pummel him with their fist. This would have blocked his eyes and busted his nose and cut him and everything else. His face would have already been displaying the marks of things here. So they smote him. It says, verse, they spit on him and they buffeted him. And others smote him with the palms of their hands. Again, that's either a slap or with a rod. We just don't know. The word could be, can mean. And now verse 68, to this slapping, they add mocking. And they say, prophesy unto us, thou Christ. Who is he that smote thee? What we had done? Well, I'll show you who it is. But he didn't. He showed great strength in not destroying them at all. So this is the physical part of it, and this is before Caiaphas. Now, what Caiaphas does is, let's go to Luke chapter 23. I'm just trying to get you the order of everything because I've never really give you the order. Luke chapter 23. Luke chapter 23. What Caiaphas does after they spit on him and beat him with their fists and hit him with rods and slap him with their hands. So what they do now is Caiaphas goes to Pontius Pilate. Now why does he go to Pontius Pilate? He's the Roman governor. And they're wanting Jesus to be crucified. So they can't give they couldn't even have him stoned legally. For execution, you had to go to the Roman authorities. Of course, by doing this, they're doing just according to what God's plan was before the world ever began. I mean, they're going, everything's going right according to what God said would happen and pictured in the Old Testament. So, they don't realize they're doing that, but they indeed are. Luke 23. Now watch, then the whole multitude of them arose and they led him to Pilate. Now they go to the Roman governor. And they begin to accuse him, and they say, we found this fellow perverting the nation, forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ a king. So now they go to Pilate. Now what happens in, you can read this in verse 23 down through, chapter 23, 1 through 6, and you can read all about that particular part of it. So, in this particular section, when Pilate hears that Jesus is from Galilee, guess who he sends him to? He said, wait a minute, this ain't my jurisdiction. Typical politician, isn't it? This ain't my jurisdiction. I don't want to get involved in this thing. That's where old Herod Antipas is at. We'll send him to Herod, and that's what he does. Here, Jesus is from Galilee. He sends him to Herod Antipas. Now, you know what? You know who that fellow was? That's the same fellow that beheaded John the Baptist. And whenever he goes before Herod, are you still in Luke chapter 23? When he goes before Herod, Jesus doesn't say anything against him. Jesus doesn't even acknowledge Herod. Doesn't say, just remains completely silent. Doesn't fool with Herod at all. Okay? So what Herod does, it says in verse 10, and the chief priests and the scribes stood and vehemently accused him. And Herod with his men of war set at naught and mocked him and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe. Now this was a robe that you would place on a king. So what are they doing? They're making fun of him. So have you ever been made fun of? It's fun, isn't it? Ever been mocked? So here he is, he's beaten and bruised and bleeding, and now he's brought before this Herod Antipas, which killed John the Baptist, beheaded him. Just a horrible man. And Jesus doesn't answer a word. So they put a gorgeous robe on him to mock him, and they send him back to Pilate. They send him, the Bible says, on that day Herod and Pilate became friends. So now let's go back to John 18, and let's look at Jesus before Pilate, part 2. Are you getting a grip of the suffering that he's went through so far? You see, remember, he's been up all night on top of everything else. I want you to see, remember in the garden, the blood sweat, the agony that he was feeling. And now he's already been pummeled one time. Already been beaten one time. But it's only going to get worse. And it's only going to escalate as time goes on here. And he's doing every bit of this and going through all of this for us. That's who he's doing it for. Okay? John chapter 18. Now, let's notice verse 34. Verse 33 of John chapter 18. Then Pilate entered into the judgment hall and called Jesus and said, "Art thou the King of the Jews?" And Jesus answered and said, "Didst thou this thing of yourself, sayest this of yourself, or did others tell it of me?" Pilate said, "Am I a Jew? Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered me to you. What hast thou done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. And now is my kingdom not from thence." Pilate therefore said, "Art thou a king then?" Jesus said, "Thou sayest that I'm a king. To this end was I born." You notice Jesus never denied being a king. King of what? King of kings. And you need to be a part of his kingdom. He never denied being a king. Now, what happens? Pilate wants to let Jesus go. And you're going to really get this as we read down through these texts. He really desires to let Jesus go. He don't want to get involved with this. He knows this is a mess. His wife even had a dream. And his wife even tells him to have nothing to do with this just man. So he has a lot going against him in this situation. So what he does first, you'll see in verse 39. He says, verse 38, Pilate said, "What is truth?" When he had said this, he went out to the Jews and said, "I find no fault at all." So Pilate finds him to be what? Innocent. He's done nothing to deserve death. So he says, "I find no what again? I find that there's no fault. But you got a custom that I should release one at the Passover. Will ye therefore that I release unto you the King of the Jews?" Now, what's Pilate trying to do? He's trying to get out of this thing. He says, "We got a custom here. It's Passover. I get to release a notable prisoner." And the worst prisoner they had was Barabbas. He was a thief and he was a murderer. He said, "I tell you what, which do you want me to let go?" It'd be like you going to prison and say, "Well, now you want to let Charles Manson go, or do you want to let this guy go, you know? An innocent person." It'd be that bad. Barabbas was a horrible man, a criminal. He said, "Which do you want me to let go?" What do you think he thought they'd do? They said, "Release unto us Barabbas." So they reject him. I could go down a path here that I'm going to leave. They actually would pay for their rejection of the Messiah. They would actually pay for that. There's a parable that shows that how God sent servant after servant to them, and they rejected each one. He says, "At last I'll send my son." And they killed his son. And he said, "What will I do?" He was sent in armies and they'd destroy their nation. And that's exactly what happened in 70 AD at the hands of the Romans. So they were, of course, held accountable for that. So they reject him. All right, now he's back before Pilate. That doesn't work. Now I want you to notice what Pilate does. John 19, verse 1, it says, "And Pilate therefore took Jesus and they scourged him." The scourge was what they would do whenever, if you was going to be crucified, they scourged first. So what I want you to recognize, in all likelihood, the thieves that were crucified with Jesus would have been scourged too. They scourged everyone. What the scourging did, it weakened you. And it made you, the blood loss will cause you to die faster. So they scourged Jesus. The scourge was a cat of nine tail whip. It was the most horrible thing in the world to go through a scourging, if you did go through it. I've read before where half the people would die from it. What they tried to do was to beat you up to the point of death. It's a horrible thing. The cat of nine tail whip had pieces of metal. It did different types of them, but the Roman scourge was the worst of all. Glass, pieces of glass, metal balls in it. And at the end of it was they called it the scorpion. It was a hook. So when they lashed you across, now when they, let me tell you something, when they scourged you naked. Just not your back. Your buttocks and your thighs too. So you can see how humiliating that would be for anyone, especially when you consider who Jesus was. And when they lash you with that, that thing would hook and it would tear the flesh off you. So the blood loss would be horrendous. And your back and your legs would look, it would look like ribbons. It was a horrible thing to go through. And like I said, it would weaken you and the blood loss would be tremendous. So he scourged him. So Pilate has him scourged. But keep on reading with me. Are you with me this morning? I hope you're getting into the message. I got to read a lot beyond thank God for it. This is what he did. You forget about it, don't you? Forget about what he did. Well, he scourges him, but he didn't stop with the scourging. They plant on him. They planted a crown of thorns on him. And the thorns, they probably got the thorns there in Jerusalem, and the average size of the thorn, if you ever look at a picture, it's an inch long. Not like a rosebush thorn. They're like an inch long, and they made a crown out of these. And then they jammed it down on his head to mock him as being a king. As a crown of thorns. Then they put on a purple robe. They took off the gorgeous robe. No, they had to take off the gorgeous robe that Herod had put on him. And put on a purple robe. And they said, "Hail, King of the Jews." And you see the word smote? That's another pommeling with the fists. They beat him again with their fists. So his face and body would have been almost unrecognizable. I never particularly liked the movie The Passion. Too Catholic for me, to be honest with you. But the pummeling would have been a little, and the bloodiness and the swelling, all of that would have been, it gives you an idea how bad it was. Just give you a little taste of how bad it was. So they pummel him with their fist. Isaiah 52. What you should be telling yourself this morning, if you're here today and saved, you should be telling yourself, "Why did he love me so?" Remember that song? "Why did he love me so?" That's what you should be telling yourself. This is how much he loved you. This is what he... You know, you've heard me say from the pulpit, love is measured by the amount that you're willing to sacrifice. Look what all he sacrificed so that you could be saved. Isaiah 52 mentions his visage. Verse 14. "Many were astonished at thee. His visage was so marred more than any man." And that's a prophecy. Your visage is his appearance. it mentions the marring of his appearance. So he would have been almost above recognition if you saw him. Go back to John. Now watch what Pilate does in verse 4. Pilate therefore went forth again and said unto them, Behold, I bring him forth to you, that ye may know. Here again twice Pilate says, I find no fault in him. So he brings Jesus out looking like he does. What do you think he's hoping for? He's hoping to release him. He's hoping to let him go. He's hoping they will look at him and this be enough for them, is what he's hoping for. That's Pilate. And Jesus came forth wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Keep in mind, this is the Creator. This is the one that made everything. And Pilate said unto them, Behold the man. And when the chief priests therefore and the officers saw him, they cried out, Crucify him. Crucify him. And Pilate said unto them, Take ye him and crucify him, for I find no fault. Three times. I find no fault in him. The Jews answered and said, We have a law that by our law he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God. When Pilate heard that, he was afraid. And he went into the judgment hall and he said, Jesus, said unto Jesus, Whence art thou? But Jesus gave him no answer. And then Pilate said, Speakest thou not to me? Know ye not that I have power to crucify thee and have power to release me? This is what Jesus said to this Roman governor. Thou couldest have no power at all except it were given thee up from above. Therefore he that delivered me unto you hath the greater what? Everybody says, all sins are the same. No, they're not. He said, He that delivered me to you hath the greater sins. Or some sins are indeed, all sins are sins, but some sins are indeed worse than the others. Okay? Now, let's move on down to verse 15. And they cried, verse 14. It was preparation of the Passover. Jesus died at what? Passover. Isn't that fitting? Isn't that fitting that Jesus died Passover? Remember in the Old Testament, Exodus 12? The story came through the land and they put the blood on the door. When I saw the blood all Passover, Jesus ate the Passover. And then the next day, he became the Passover. That Passover lamb pictured him. It pictured him. Pictured what he would do. Now let's read on. Let's start to bring this to a close. Verse 15. But they cried, Away with him, crucify him. And Pilate said, Shall I crucify your king? Chief priest answered, said, We have no king but Caesar. Then delivered he him therefore unto be crucified. And they took Jesus and they led him away. And he, bearing his cross, went forth into the place called the Skull, which is Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him and two others with him on either side, one, and Jesus in the midst or in the middle. From other texts, when Jesus was going to be crucified, you remember it said he stumbled and fell, and he was weak. And why was he weak? He was up all night. He'd been beaten twice with their fists. Blood loss from the scourging, so the weight of the cross caused him to fall. And then they appointed a man, remember, Simon of Cyrene. And he helped him carry his cross. And then this is all pre-cross. This is what he went through. And then once he got to the cross, then they nailed him to it. And, of course, then 6 hours later, he expired and he died. That's tremendous suffering, isn't it? That's amazing love, too, isn't it? He went through all of that to save me. And when you look at, that's just the physical part. I haven't looked at the worst part yet. We haven't looked at the propitiation part. But that's just the physical part. But he was willing to leave the portals of glory to take a human body so that he could be the substitute for your sin. And how horrid of a thing for someone to hear that and reject it. How horrible of a thing for someone to hear that and at the same time reject it. Hebrews chapter 12. Turn there with me. Well, it's quiet in here this morning. I think it's a good quiet, though. Don't you? Sometimes in a church, a quiet is a good quiet because people's really tuned in to what's going on and tuned in to what you're saying. Hebrews chapter 12. You ever think you're really going through a hard time? Look at Jesus. You ever feel like quitting and giving up? Look at Jesus. Look what all He went through for you. Look at Him. Hebrews 12 says this. Verse 1, wherefore, seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. Now listen to this, folks. For the joy... I can't get a hold of that, Doug. Who for the joy that was set before him. Did y'all hear what I just read? Who for the joy that was set before him. I mean, he considered it a joy because of who he was doing it for. I can't get a grasp on that. Who for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the Father of God, or the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners, lest ye be wearied and faint in your mind. Look what all he suffered. Look what all he suffered for you. When you feel like giving up and throwing in the towel, look what all he suffered for you. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 3 was a text I used in last week's sermon. It says, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? I mean, you have heard of His death and why He died and His resurrection and you see what He suffered. How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? You don't need to neglect it. You need to trust it. You need to trust that He died on Calvary for you and rose again the third day. Look at 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21 says this, it's better not to know the way of truth than to know it and to turn from it. Let me say it one. Better not to know the way of truth than to know it and then to turn from it. You know why it is? Judgment is greater. I can't figure out how judgment can be greater. I just know the Bible teaches it. Greater degrees of judgment based on greater knowledge. Want me to use an illustration? He told Capernaum, his headquarters in Galilee, here's what he told him. He said, it'll be more tolerable in the day of judgment for Sodom and Gomorrah than it will be for you. Because the miracles that's been done in your city were done in their city. They were repented in sackcloth and ashes. Greater. Here's what I'm trying to say. Here in America, where there's churches, there's still true churches in America. There's a lot of false ones, but there's still true churches. And the gospel's preached. And you can hear it on the radio. And there's some good preachers on television. And we're so blessed. And for people to hear it, and reject it, and reject it, and reject it, and reject it. He says, on the day of judgment, it'll be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah than it'll be for you. Your judgment is greater based on greater light given to you. I don't know how it is. I'm going to have to stop. Did you get a grip on what I did this morning? I hope it blessed you. It should draw you closer to the King. Oh, it touches your heart. It's a big deal what He did. That's just the physical part. I'm not talking about the main part. We'll look at the main part if we're here next week. Should it make you love Him a little bit more? So don't ever think you feel lonely. There was never nobody as lonely as Him. Because even His Father forsook Him. That's something will never happen to you. He knows what pain feels like. He knows what hurt feels like. He knows what rejection feels like. He knows all of that. The Old Testament says He's a man of sorrows. And He's acquainted with grief. And that's why He says in Hebrews 4 to go boldly to His throne. That you may find grace to help in time of need. Don't make you want to serve Him. Don't make you want to sing to Him. Don't make you want to worship Him. Don't make you want to thank Him, thank Him, thank Him for what He's done for you. See, that's why we looked at it. To gain a new appreciation by looking at what He did. All God's people said, let's all stand. Thank you. If I had you pray yet, I'm going to have you.